Welcome to A Card Knock Life. This is episode 7. And first of all, I'd like to apologize for the delay in the posting. We're a day behind here. We did know that this was going to happen, and I just neglected to make a note of that. But I was away at a concert last night, and we had agreed to reschedule. But as a result, we are down a John Gelly today. And in his place, we have a special guest we'll introduce in a second. But first of all, hello, I'm Corey, your host. I'm here with your host, Brandon Brainstorm No Fetch Simmerow.
Mac Dat.
Daryl Feltner.
Heyo.
And Zhuming Chen.
Yeah,
I'd
be the best.
All right, but we've got Kendrick Lentini here. Did I say your last name right, Kendrick?
That's right. Hey, I'm Kendrick.
Hey, Kendrick.
Want to give a little bit of a background of my magic history, I suppose?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I started, you know, around 2006, so I guess I could be considered a veteran by now. But I primarily concern myself with deck building and theory, so that I love that stuff. Even more than playing sometimes.
Yeah, you're one of those millennial players. You know, you got into the game shortly after 2000.
Mm-hmm.
You demand a high wage in the workplace with exactly. Very little effort involved.
When the good cards started to come out in Future Sight.
Kendrick, I've seen you play Modern before. Is that your primary focus, or what would you say?
Modern and Legacy, I'd say.
Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hate Standard?
No, I think...
Kendrick, why do you hate Standard?
Oh, you got... Okay, you caught me. All right.
You got him. He's a Legacy player.
It seems pretty simplistic to me compared to the other formats, but yeah. I think it's still a good format on its own. I choose not to invest in those cards because it's pretty quickly rotating, but...
Right. Yeah. That's cool, man. You don't have to defend it. I was just giving you a hard time. Some people have simple minds. It's good for the Coreys of the world. Anyways, we're going to get started right away here. We've got this is just our second week in the host picks the bit segment format. And so we're going to kick things off with Daryl's stuff.
All right. Hey, everybody. Tonight, it's, as you guys know, I love to play Control. And there's just been some interesting Control brews of recent, both from the Modern and Legacy 5Ks that happened last weekend. Where was that 5K at? It was...
I believe it was in Star City.
I know it was Star City, but where was it at?
Where's Star City? I don't know.
Oh, Virginia?
Yeah. No, it was not in Virginia. I was just making a joke. It was in Portland.
Portland, Oregon? Okay, so... Yeah. The Portland players brought out their Control brews for sure this weekend. You get to play a Sea Legacy Specialist, Joel Set, playing Miracles, winning a mirror in the top 8 of the Legacy 5K. Nothing super different about the main board of Joe's deck. It's pretty much what he's been doing. He's the master of the Ventillion Click Venser, sort of. He was the guy that created the genesis of these are really powerful blue creatures. I'm going to pair them with Caracas and grind you out of the game doing that.
Also popularized main board Rebs and Pyroblasts too.
Yes,
which
also,
he continues to play.
Yeah, also called that Cheater Miracles, and
yep.
It went from Cheater Miracles to becoming the standard Miracles. So interesting choices. He just plays one Spell Snare this weekend. He thought it might have been better than the Spell Pierce. It looks like, and he, you know, three swords. Some of his lists were playing two. Some of them were playing three. So he's kind of back on the three. But the interesting part comes in the sideboard. Decided that Monastery Mentor was the flavor of the week, and it was better than Extra Entreats against your green, black, and other opponents. So he's playing two Monastery Mentors, and he's also playing a Cavern of Souls, because he figured he had enough very powerful creatures that in the blue mirrors, he wanted Cavern to protect his wizards or his humans or whatever he valued highly at the time. So some blue mirrors, like against the Delver decks, isn't Static Caster, so he'd want to protect his wizards or his humans. Everything kind of overlaps, except for Monastery Mentor and Vendillion Click kind of clash. But other than that, the Cavern is a very interesting thought, and then the in the sideboard. I would kind of want to get your guys' thoughts. What do you think about the Monastery Mentor Cavern version over playing multiple Entreats?
I like the alternative win condition. You know, people are usually thinking they can go into the long game with Miracles, but now starting around turn 4 or 5, they can dump that Mentor down and just start going to town with their instants and sorceries.
Yeah, what I really like about Mentor in the sideboard is that they're going to board out most of the removal. And so that's really where Mentor is potentially even stronger than Entreat the Angels when your opponent's deck doesn't have any removal in it.
Like one thing I would notice is that decks that you're going to bring this in against, a lot of times they'll even be, you'll bring this in against the Tarmogoyf decks, but the Tarmogoyf decks will keep their briefcase in, so it kind of spreads them very thin. Because you have to break up, Click Caracas. You have to break up Counterbalance Top. Your opponent might be playing Rest in Peace out of the board against you if they think it's better than something else, and then on top of that, you'll have to figure out a way to manage Monastery Mentor. So it kind of gives you a lot of different varied fronts to attack on. I think it makes it a little tougher for the Delver decks, and I think it also makes it a little tougher for the Mirror, because a lot of times the Mirror will be playing Entreat and trying to, like, you know, make five angels into turn and attack you. Whereas you're just like, I'm going to play this guy on turn three and flip my top and play another top and make a guy and say go. And you have to have two removal spells, and it's white, so you can't red blast it. So it makes your opponent hedge and keep in some number of Terminus, which is horrifying to do in that matchup anyways. So it kind of gives you a secondary line of attack.
Yeah, and I was thinking about the sideboard Cavern of Souls. In a way, it's bad to have a land in your sideboard in that, you know, it takes the place of a spell that you could be improving your deck with. But if you really want access to that Cavern of Souls effect, it does make sense that it's in the sideboard rather than the main board, because once it's in the main board, often your opponent's going to see it game one, and then, you know, the jig is up.
Yeah. And then you also get run into the problem that, like, Mountain is a colorless land for this deck, because a lot of your spells are double blue, like Dillion Click, Venser, Jace, Dig Through Time, you know, Counterbalance, Counterspell, the one Counterspell. All those are double blue. And so you have a Mountain, which doesn't make blue, and isn't super necessary, because you don't need to cast Entreat with it. So it kind of is just, like, off in left field. And then on top of that, you're going to put an actual colorless land into your deck. So it kind of creates a very awkward tension that all you're going to be doing with this land most of the time is spinning top with it.
Yeah, you're not suggesting you're boarding out the Mountain when you're bringing in the Cavern, right?
Depends. It depends, in all honesty. Like, if it's like... I'm not saying you board one out when you board one in. I'm saying that putting them both in the main deck creates this, like, very awkward tension on your mana base.
Absolutely.
Because not only do you have Mountain as a colorless land, essentially, you have Cavern of Souls, which is an actual colorless land. So you can't play both of them, as to why people were thinking, well, why is this Cavern eating up an important sideboard slot?
Hey, I ask you guys something as the, like, non-legacy player in the room? What is Venser's function in this deck?
So,
Swiss Army Knife.
Yeah, it does literally everything. So you've played against Liliana, because you've played Standard, you've played Buffer.
Yeah.
So you both get Hellbent rather quickly. You draw Venser, Shaper Slot, you hold it, you pass. Your opponent draws, he plays like a Tarmogoyf, and he's like, all right, plus one Liliana. You play Venser, bounce their Liliana, and they discard it. Because Liliana's effect still resolves.
Oh, in response. I see what you're saying.
Yeah. You block their Tarmogoyf and bounce your Venser with Caracas so it doesn't die. So now you have this weird 4-mana boomerang that can attack them until they can kill it. And they can't abrupt K it, so they have to wasteland your Caracas.
Okay.
And you play two Caracas, so you have a second Caracas when they wasteland the first one. So you have, like, it's just this huge piece of flexibility. You can bounce ultimate. Planeswalkers are about to ultimate. You can bounce Tarmogoyfs and block other creatures and bounce your Venser. So it gives you a lot of flexibility with the slot.
Yeah, in general, it's really good against fair decks. Even the Stoneforge Mystic decks, you can often bounce a Jite or a sword of some kind and then block whatever 2/1 that they are attacking with. So it gives you a big tempo swing plus card advantage in that respect.
Okay, right on. Cool.
Yeah.
Did you guys get to see the matchup, the finals matchup at all?
I did not get to see it, but it was a Miracles Mirror. That involved one guy was Joe's deck, and then the other deck was playing Its Wrinkle was sideboard Teferi. Sort of that's what people have been moving to, is Teferi in the sideboard. So I don't really know. I like Teferi conceptually as a card when paired with multiple Caracases. Looks like this version wasn't actually playing the Teferi. This was more like the 21 land Schoniger version of it with multiple ponders to try and, like, just make Counterbalance Top as quickly as possible. But other versions in the top 8 and then this top 16 of this tournament were playing sideboard Teferi, which when you pair that with Caracas, it's almost unkillable. And if you pair it with Cavern and Caracas, they actually can't kill it because they have to play at sorcery speed and they can't counter it. So it's something to keep in mind as like a tool that you can have in your bag to if you're going to play Legendary Miracles. But 5 mana is a whole lot of mana to make this like 3/4 that makes your opponent play at sorcery speed. So it's kind of clunky. So Joe's deck kind of grinded out the 2 Snapcaster, 2 Jace deck. Because all he had was 4 win conditions, so you can just click him repeatedly and grind him away from his win conditions. And then, like, he tries to board in the same number of clicks as Joe, but Joe has 2 Caracas to pair with his click, so he can, like, manipulate the click battle, decide who gets to block, decide who gets to, like, check each other's hand, and he kind of has control of that portion of the matchup. And, like, it forces his opponent to leave in, like, sorts of Plowshares, or if he just is like, I'm going to beat the creatures with, like, Red Blast, he'll just try and Red Blast them. But then you're wasting valuable Red Blast to kill Jace and things like that. So it kind of puts them in an awkward spot.
Yeah, typically the deck with more threats wins in the Miracles Mirror.
Yeah. And harder to kill threats. But that's all I have really on the Miracles control decks in the top 8 of that tournament. I did see a nice little blue-white control deck in 12th of the Modern IQ that weekend that I didn't want to talk about. If you guys had any more things you wanted to say, feel free, but I'll move to the modern deck if not.
Go for it.
All I see is the bastardization of Dark Maverick being turned to Abzan Deathblade.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
Doesn't that piss the Legacy players off who are like the MTG faithfuls and they're all about like the old like pet names for Legacy decks and,
yeah.
And they're like trying to lodge the like new names down their throats.
Yeah. It's horrible. So this deck is it's labeled Blue-White Control.
But it should be Ojutai control.
I don't even know what you would call this. I'm just going to read the list and then kind of talk about how what it looks like to me. 2 Spellskite, 2 Restoration Angel, 3 Snapcaster, 4 Spellstutter Sprite, 2 Dragonlord Ojutai, 2 Vendilion Click, 24 lands, 2 Islands, 2 Plains, 4 Colonnade, 4 Flooded Stream, 2 Hollow Fountain, 4 Mutavault, a Mystic Gate of Scalding Tarn, 2 Seachrome Coast, a Steam Vents, a Minimo School at Water's Edge. For those of you that don't know what that card does, it's a EDH staple, legendary land, taps for a blue, comes into play untapped, and then you can pay a blue and tap it to untap a legendary permanent. And then 21 spells, a Sword of Light and Shadow, some 3 Anticipate, 2 Cryptic Command, 4 Path, 3 Remand, 3 Solemngard Scorn, a Revelation, 2 Valorous Stance, 2 Supreme Verdict, and then the sideboard is a Sword of Light and Shadow, 2 more Spellskites, 2 Aven Mindsister, 2 Kitchen Banks, 2 Stony Silence, a Celestial Purge, a Dispel, a Flash Freeze, 2 Wear Tear, and a Supreme Verdict.
By the way, this is a modern deck. I don't know if
it's a modern deck. Sorry.
It's the 12th place deck at the SCG Open.
Yeah, 12th place at the SCG 5K.
No, the 5K, sorry.
Yeah. This deck, I don't even know what to call this thing. It looks like a tempo deck to me, in all honesty, but it's just like a super awkward tempo deck. He's trying to do the Dragonlord Ojutai plus Solemngard Scorn, or one of your 4 Mutavaults plus Solemngard Scorn. But then he kind of saw that, and he's like, well, if I have Mutavault, I might as well play Spellstutter Sprite and have, like, 3 mana Spell Snares in my deck. So...
Right. Let's call this Blue-White Changelings.
I don't even know
sure.
What to think about this. I kind of like that there's, like, a bunch of flash creatures with the Sword of Light Shadow. It protects from, like, most of the removal spells in the format, and it, like, gets you back your flash creatures to, like, grind them out of the game slowly but surely. The Dragonlord Ojutai, Sword of Light Shadow, Hexproof Synergy is pleasant. And then the untap it with Minimo, give it Hexproof after you attack with it, and still get to anticipate is also a nice little trick. Valorous Stance is kind of seemed out of place to me at first because I actually didn't know what the card did because I don't play much Standard. And then I read it and I was like, okay, so it kills Tarmogoyf and like protects your guy from getting killed. So like you get to like counter target Abrupt Decay or something like that with it. So I guess that's pleasant as well. This just looks really strange to me. 2 Cryptic Command just feels wrong. I don't know. That's just another thing that
you want more.
I would like a 3rd Cryptic Command probably.
You
I don't
do
know
have 4 Mutavaults.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair. You do have 4 Mutavaults, but
luckily you're 2 colors.
You're 2 colors.
I mean, that's really the reason why you can play such difficult mana costs here.
Yeah, like I feel like The Cryptic Commands are almost free because you're playing just two colors.
I'm only playing six non-blue lands.
Yeah, I would like a third island just to protect against, like, to be able to cast literally all of my spells against Blood Moon, but details.
So Minamo, School at Water's Edge seems pretty sweet, and that's one of those cards you look at and you're like, why is this not played more in Modern? But then you remember that all the legendary creatures don't block Vendilion Clique, you know, Geist of St. Traft in blue. Well, but was, now that you've got Dragon Lord Ojutai.
Yeah, there was no real upside to making them be able to block because they weren't big. Like, a big 5/4. And it's not even that you actually want Dragon Lord Ojutai to block. It's that when you attack with it and they're like, okay, path to exile.
Yeah.
You untap it and it has hexproof and it counters their removal spell. So you're just basically putting a counter spell into play for two mana counter target removal spell. So that's actually what the bigger deal for Minimo is there.
Yeah, seems awesome.
Great. I hear what you're saying, Corey. I mean, Minamo probably should have seen some play in earlier decks, you know, Ojutai aside. It has very little downside. I mean, Tech Edge is always going to have a target between, like, Colonnade or whatever. And it being pure upside if you have any legendary in your deck. Seems like it makes sense. Like, imagine untapping just, like, Tassigar in your bug tempo deck or
control
whatever.
Deck, yeah.
That seems like the most common use of it.
Yeah.
Though that you are low on basics.
That at all. Like,
oh, I suppose fetch lands is a good reason.
And path.
You know, you need... Yeah, exactly.
So,
I'm always a big fan of these utility lands. in the Geist decks, a lot of times, they weren't running the blue legendary land, they were running the white one.
Yeah, they're playing a Gondra Castle because they would pyroclasm them and you would Gondra Castle your Geist so that it wouldn't die, and then you'd untap and kill them with your Geist. Because even if they were playing like Fire Spout or Anger, they would tap out for their Red Sweeper after you untapped to attack them with Geist if they didn't have it in their hand. And then you would like Gondra Castle it and they would just get blown out of the water and spend their whole turn trying to kill something they couldn't kill.
Does this deck just seem like the Ojutai are in place of like a Geist? Like, doesn't Geist fit in this deck?
I don't know. I actually don't know. So he obviously wants to play Solemgar Scorn. So I think you have to just have like X number of dragons to play that card. Because 2-mana counterspell, like 2-mana Force Spike is probably good in Modern most of the time unless you're playing against Tron.
Okay.
And then if you have 2-mana counterspell, like that's extremely good. Like, they haven't printed Counterspell yet for Modern.
How about 2-mana Mana Leak?
2-mana Mana Leak? It's literally split the difference between the two. Solemgar Scorn isn't going to be dead in the late game, and you're going to probably have a dragon by the time that Mana Leak is bad. So Solemgar Scorn sort of plays the Mana Leak role anyways. It's good early and counters their spell usually, even if it's just Force Spike. And then when the game goes late, Mana Leak is bad, whereas Solemgar Scorn is usually just Counterspell because you have a dragon of some kind, either in your hand or in play.
I'm honestly not sure that this deck's going to happen. Maybe it will, but it's not there yet. Like, there seem to really be like a lot of anti-synergies in it and a lot of really bad situations that you can dig yourself into, like drawing a bunch of Mutavaults and like your only blue source is a Mystic Gate or something. And
I don't like the spell spreads. I don't like the spell spreads. That's something that like
seems odd. I mean, you have to have the Mutavault for Solemgar Scorn to be a counterspell, but you have to have blue mana for Solemgar Scorn to be cast. So that's like, I don't know. It just seems backwards to me, doesn't it?
You're basically
you're turning that Scorn into a cancel.
Right. Yeah. Yes, you are, aren't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you can attack with part of that cancel.
That's why, I've considered building a version of this deck, something similar, just like abusing the Ojutai, Minimo, Solemgar Scorn interactions.
Yeah.
And every time I tried to build it, it always ended up playing Nameless Inversion, because I would just rather have like a removal spell if it's a changeling. So I ended up splashing black and it started to look like Esper Dragons from Standard, except with like upgrades all around as far as like removal and draw spells are concerned and stuff like that. But like the one thing I actually take away from this deck is like, how good is Valorous Stance in Modern?
It's good. It's really good.
Like, because the main threat is Tarmogoyf.
Yeah.
There's like Tarmogoyf, Tassigar, Restoration Angel.
Kill Spellskite.
Deceiver Edsar.
Power, isn't it?
No, it's toughness.
Oh, excuse me.
It's Yeah, it's 4 toughness. Kills a Siege Rhino.
Kills Spellskite, that's good and bad, because then it can be redirected to Spellskite. But it can also hit Deceiver Exarch.
Yeah. So, like, this card seems like it has a lot of upside if you're going to play any number of creatures in your deck. And it's just not a thing I thought of for Modern. Yeah. I'm curious to see what you guys think about it. I think it could see trending play upward in Modern. Now that, like, someone's done it and it, like, was reasonable and didn't feel bad.
Yeah, no,
my opinion is it's a little bit weaker than Path, but also weaker than the removal options that other colors give. But I can see how this deck is blue-white, and you don't just want 4 paths, you want more. And so it might be the second best removal.
Second best thing you can do.
You know, but like if you have access to Bolt, like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he does. He has a Steam Vents and his mana base for Wear Tear.
That's just for Wear Tear.
I mean, but still, you could warp your mana base a tiny bit and play Bolt.
Hey, like, this can help you lodge your Geist attack if that's the route you're going. I think that's kind of a good use for it. It's utility. I mean, obviously, that's why you want to play it over a Lightning Bolt.
I do like the 2 Sword of Light Shadows also. I think that card's kind of underplayed as far as, like, I think it might be the best sword in Modern.
I was curious about that one. Why do you think it's better than, like...
Fire and Ice?
I was thinking, actually, the Feast and Famine in this deck because it has so many instants, but...
So, the reason I feel like it's better is, like, a lot of times you'll get into this, like, stall where you, like, need something to finish the game. And so, Sword of Light and Shadow, if you put it on your Mutavolt, like, you attack and they have to do... They can't deal with the Mutavolt. And if they, I guess they can't deal with the Mutavolt when you equip it, it doesn't matter because that's how they'd have to kill it anyways. But it lets you gain minute card advantage over the course of a game by picking up like Spell Guides or Snapcasting Rages or Vendilion Clicks. And then it also lets you have a little life gain buffer against Burn.
Yeah. So I think the white being really relevant with Lingering Souls too.
Yeah, but... Lingering Souls being a card.
But black's also pretty... I mean, green is also pretty important on that. I was thinking that you would probably pick up like an instant creature, like a Resto, a Snapcaster, etc. But you wouldn't be able to leverage that card until next turn, and that could be key.
Right. I think the deck kind of missed on playing Core Firewalker. I don't know if Core Firewalkers or Kitchen Finks is better in the like anti-red slot. Kitchen Finks a little better against Kitchen Finks. Yeah, he's playing 2 Kitchen Finks, which is a little better against the grindy decks. But a little worse against Burn, because like 2 life in weird increments where you have to kill your own Kitchen Finks is sort of awkward, whereas versus like the steady stream of life gain across the course of the game. So it's another thing that can be, like, there are small minute changes that can be made to this deck, but I think the concept is really solid, and I'm kind of interested in experimenting with it in some way, shape, or form.
Ready to talk about an even better deck?
Oh boy.
Oh man.
All right, it's Brandon stuff.
So this is the Twinning End deck that took 5th place in that same Modern event, piloted by Colton Anderson. And, I mean, this concept has been around for a while, right? You just take 2 really good combos and you mash them together.
So it's like a thing that exists, but it just started to pop up on Modo. And it got really popular after LSV did a video on it.
Okay. So,
so that's where the genesis of this guy came from, at least.
Okay, so we'll run through the deck list real quick. So 28 creatures, which is pretty typical for like the Living End decks. You know, you want a lot of guys that can cycle to your graveyard. 2 Architects of Will, 4 Deadshot Minotaur, 4 Deceiver Exarch, 3 Fulminator Mage, 1 Jungle Weaver, 4 Monstrous Carabid, 1 Pestermite, 3 Simeon Spirit Guide, 4 Street Wraith, 1 Twisted Abomination, 1 Kiki Jiki, just a smattering of lands. Probably the most notable difference between this and your typical Living End list is they don't have the Dryad Arbor, so they can fetch for a creature that will give you a target for the Violent Outburst.
They also don't have a Kessig Wolfrun. I've seen a lot of the Living End decks play Kessig Wolfrun.
Yeah, I think this one's a little more strapped on its color.
Absolutely, but that's another card to like know that Living End can play and has been pretty good in some matchups for it.
Yep. And then the 14 spells, 4 Splinter Twin, 4 Violent Outburst, 3 Demonic Dread, 3 Living End. And so I used to play Living End a lot in Legacy, or not in Legacy, but in Modern, when Travis Wu was really a big proponent of trying to get that deck out there and try to get people placing with it. And honestly, I really like the idea of running the 4 Fulminator Mage and the 4 Beast Within. So that way, what you're trying to do is deprive your opponents of mana while building up your graveyard, and eventually there's a critical turn where your opponent just doesn't have the mana to counter your cascade spells.
So the 4th Fulminator Mage is in the sideboard. So you have all 4 of them. But there's no Beast Withins.
Yeah, the Beast Within needed to make space for the second Splinter Twin. Right?
Yeah. Beast Within had to go to make room for Splinter Twin.
So, I mean, so there's a definite difference. I guess with this deck, it's nice because you can fire off your Cascade spell, and if your Living End gets countered, well then, instead of going for another Living End, you can just go for the
Splinter Twin combo. Yeah.
Or you Ricochet Trap the counterspell onto the Ricochet Trap.
So, I played some games against this deck, both on Moto and in real life. And there are some definite nombos that the pilots need to be aware of. Do not try and do the Kiki Jiki combo with Pest and Rite when you have Deadshot Minotaurs. Bad news bears. Especially if you don't stack your triggers correctly.
Okay.
This deck could actually splash. I think you might want to splash a little bit of white. To try and
fifth color
because Violent Outburst is good, Demonic Dread is garbage, and so I would just rather play Ardent Plea because you can just cast it. Just like Exalted Cascade, here's my Living
End. That's the blue white one, right? Yeah.
So both of your off colors blackies, fine.
I mean, when you were mentioning white, I was thinking, well, there's what's it called, the Village Bellringer. You could just replace blue. The card you're suggesting is blue-white.
It's also blue, yeah. But yeah, like, play all 5 colors because you have enough, like, of the cyclers, you have enough that are, like, Jungle Weaver, Twisted A-Bomb, like, the land cyclers from Alara Block and then Twisted Abomination that was time-shifted. Between the 6 of them, you can find the way to the correct mana base. You'll take a little more damage. You're not playing Blood Moon in this version anyway, so it doesn't matter. But you getting the correct toggle of dual lands to fetch lands to cyclers is a little tough. Because even with Nod of the Bone in the sideboard, I've just seen this deck kind of struggle against Burn. And being able to like sideboard Leyline of Sanctity and cast it to protect yourself from Burn and Graveyard Hate seems very good for this deck. And so I don't know like how it fits into the sideboard or whatnot, but I feel like it's something that might need to be explored.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a big thing I noticed is a lot of his sideboard options are weaker than if you were to just do the traditional Living End. And obviously it paid off for him, right? He took 5th, so
yeah.
I'm curious to see what the future is for this deck, if this is going to be the new standard for Living End, or if this is just kind of one of those times where people weren't expecting it in an event this size.
Yeah, it's got to be that one, right?
It's
got to
be the latter, right?
I actually don't think so. I've played this against this deck a ton on Moto, and it's just here's a way to kill you. Are you dead to it? Nope. All right, Pestermite in turn, untap, Splinter Twin. Are you dead? No. All right, we'll do it again. Like,
so the way that I really make this deck more comprehensible is that number one, both of the combos are. The hate for them are completely different.
Yeah,
so you can't really hate out both of them at the same time. And then number two, they mesh pretty well together in that since there's no tutors in Modern, all these cyclers actually get you to twin combo a lot faster. Like you natural draw it way more often.
Yes.
So
that's what I've run into.
Both of these aspects make it a little bit stronger than it looks on paper.
I guess Twin's already playing Serum Vision, so having one of these Deadshot Minotaurs in your deck is only a little bit worse.
Right.
So, I mean, instant speed Serum Vision.
Okay, I suppose that Deadshot Minotaur in this instance is just a little bit worse than Serum Vision.
He's a little bit more badass than Serum Visions.
Oh boy.
It's like Serum Visions that puts a Deadshot Minotaur in your graveyard.
That's right.
So good.
You could ever use that for some reason. I don't know.
It's like a Thought Scour for one card, and that one card is always Deadshot Minotaur.
That card sounds good.
Yeah, okay. I'd play that in this deck. It's designed for this deck.
It's like a sleight of hand, and you always choose Deadshot Minotaur.
It's like a brainstorm where you don't draw any of the cards. You draw one of the cards, and then you put a Deadshot Minotaur in your discard pile.
All right, now we're stretching it.
Yeah.
You also don't get 20 on top of your deck.
I was stuck at sleight of hand. You guys went to brainstorm, and I was sickened. Like, we're done here.
It's kind of like an instant speed Tybalt activation where you don't get to discard randomly.
All right, we're done here.
What else?
We're done here.
Brandon, you got anything else? I don't know if you could
no, let's Google let's today. Keep on rolling. What's even better than this deck, Corey?
I'll tell you what's even better than this deck. In fact, this is an awesome IQ, by the way. There was some like really awesome stuff that showed up this weekend at the Modern event in particular. But I'm so happy to see that Abzan Collected Company won, because I'm like, I love this deck. I think this is great. Seems pretty much like the Collected Company was reprinted to replace Birthing Pod, like specifically, as it's totally like this deck is just becoming Birthing Pod again. And the one that won now also has the Archangel of Thune and Spike Feeder combo in it, which is pretty sweet, as well as just a lot of the like general value cards in here. They even go up to Murderous Ridecap in the Kitchen Finks combo. So I'll read down the list real quick, but this is Brad Rutherford's first place deck. He
I know him, actually.
Betwining Ends.
Very good player from Seattle.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, do you? Cool.
Did he sign your chest?
Sign my chest. I wish.
You should have him sign your Collected Companies.
All right. Yeah, we'll do.
He's got one Archangel Thune, four Birds, two E-Witness, four Kitchen Finks, one Murderous Redcap, one Scooze, one Spike Feeder, three Tarmogoyfs, two Viscera Seer, three Wall of Roots, four Anafens. He's got the full four here. One Malira, one Varls, the Scar-Striped, which is the legendary troll warrior maze runner guy.
So to be clear, sorry to interrupt you, this is Anafenza the Kintree Spirit, which is the new white-white guy that combos as a Malira, basically.
But it's just way better.
But it's better. Worse mana cost, but better card.
Yeah.
So if you're going to Value Town, Anafenza is the way to go over Malira. Both of them are a bear, 2 for a 2/2, but Anafenza is more like a Watch Wolf in that you're going to get that 3 power, 3 toughness out of value at the bare minimum on that card.
You actually don't bolster bare minimum. It's only when another creature comes into play.
Right. But on average, you're going to have a creature come into play once.
After Anafenza? Sure, yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, I'll buy.
All right. So that kind of explains the Tarmogoyfs in the deck, which this, like, a lot of these decks seem to go, like, full-on combo and just jam, like, all the combo pieces and hope to, like, Cord or Collected Company them out. But this one, you know, runs the Tarmogoyfs, and it's got the full 4 in offensive, which kind of seems like a lot, but apparently
that's legendary. That's a strategy.
That card gets killed a lot.
It does, in fact, dies
a lot. So.
I like the Scar Stripe. That's the 3-mana 2/2. One, a black and a green symbol for each creature in your graveyard has scavenge, which seems ridiculously good when you got all these two drops in your deck. So really cheap +1/+1 counters on your Kitchen Finks every turn. But also this guy can be regenerated when you sack another creature. So
yeah, he's really there. Pretty good value. He's really there as Viscera Seer number 3.
Right.
Some decks like to play the human one. Brandon, help me out here. The white black one.
That would be Cartel Aristocrat.
Cartel Aristocrat, yeah. A lot of decks like to play that. Varol seems like a kind of an upgrade. Like being able to I should have this guy, put a bunch of counters on him, go. Seems fine. Like scavenge my Tarmogoyf onto my Varols, go.
Yeah, Cartel Aristocrat walked into a talent agency and started sacrificing his sister.
Is that your aristocrat's joke?
That's my aristocrat's joke. Hey, Varls. No, wait. Hang on. I lost my train of thought here. Varls. Yeah, Daryl, correct me if I'm wrong. Sacrifice a creature to regenerate Varls. Basically, you put that trigger on the stack, and then when he would be dealt lethal damage, he becomes tapped.
Right? When he's dealt lethal damage or destroyed, remove him from combat and put him into play and taps.
Okay.
Remove all damage from it.
Remove all damage from him, yeah. Like, obviously he does not die, correct.
So you can put infinite of those sack to regenerate him triggers on the stack at any time during your turn.
If you have a creature to sack, yeah.
Absolutely. Right, right, right.
Because
right.
It's a replacement effect. It just says the next time he dies, do this.
Okay.
So you can just say infinite times, the next time he dies, do this.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, you can count the regeneration shields in a way, if that's what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So this deck, I mean, this has been showing up a lot, especially on Modo. And this is like the first time I've seen the Spike Feeder Archangel in the deck, and the first time I've seen four Anafenza. So there's a lot of like time for this one to settle, I think. But this is going to be, I could see this being a pretty pretty big piece of the modern puzzle going forward. Once it gets figured out, I think it's a very consistent deck. And Collected Company, in some cases, is better than Birthing Pod, and in a lot of matchups it is.
So I've played against this deck on Modo in a daily, and it was horrifying. My opponent just went like, turn one, Birds of Paradise, turn two, Anafenza, Kintree Spirit, turn three, Collected Company, put into play Eternal Witness, Knight of the Reliquary. And I was just like, I'm not beating that. All right. Like,
five. Yeah. Can you buy back your Collected Company?
Yes, you can. It's terrifying.
Yeah. That's the greatest part.
Yep, he picked up his Collected Company, had a 2-3 birds, attacked me for four. He had a 1-2 birds and then a 3-2 Eternal Witness. Attacked me for four, and then just, like, played Collected Company again. It was like, oh, the Malira combo, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously,
like, Collected Company being instant speed makes it, like, such a surprise that your opponent... You know, when they know what you're on, they have to kind of just, like, be pooping their pants the entire time they play you, assuming that you're ready to go off at any moment. Because drawing into two creatures off the top of your deck and then having a cord in hand to get that last piece, which oftentimes you can get a Viscerous Seer without even tapping any mana on a cord convoke, you can go off at the end of their turn with no pieces on the board.
Yeah, you might even be able to tap the creatures that you get from Collected Company off your cord and get surprising amounts of mana for your cord.
Yeah,
which is why the Wall of Roots is good. That gives you two cost for the collection.
Yeah, that happened to me when I was playing against the deck. He just had a Wall of Roots in play. He's like, all right, make a Collected Company, put it into play Anafenza and Kitchen Banks, tap my three guys, make a man off my Wall of Roots, cord for one, Viscerous Seer, scry my deck, put Murderous Red Cap on top, draw, play this guy and kill you. Like, it's like turn three. I was just like, oh, okay, like...
Not to mention that digging six cards into your deck gives you more access to your sideboard cards, such as Spellskite, Core Firewalker, Orzhov Pontiff, Reclamation Sage, a lot of the three and less CMC creatures that are going to be hit at instant speed.
Kataki, Sin Collector.
Kataki, yeah. I love getting Flicker Wisp with this card.
Mm-hmm. Instant speed Sin Collector, too.
Instant speed Sin Collector, yeah.
Yeah, this version issued Flicker Wisp, which I think is unfortunate. But,
hasn't showed up in a lot of them, actually.
I think it's really good. Like, it's just another Restoration Angel, yeah.
It's, obviously can reset your comes into play abilities, but also it can be used as a combat trick. And like, I've had a matchup against Twin before where the guy is casting all his spells on his creature to, you know, beat in for like, lethal poison damage. And then I'll flash in the Collected Company and Flicker Wisp his creature out of combat. So... Works defensively as well.
Yeah.
But obviously it's a pretty tight deck, and squeezing in Flicker Wisp, especially when you're running Spike Feeder combo, is tough to do.
So I think it's just industry standard to run four cord alongside four Collected Company.
Yeah, I guess it is now.
It's not industry standard. Some people were playing like two cord, four Collected Company. Some were playing three. Some were playing four. I think it depends on like, to what degree you want to be like one ofs, and to what degree you want to like just be like 4-4-4, like these are the best cards in my deck and I just always want to hit them. Because if you want to play more one ofs, you'll play more cords. If you want to play just like more quad laser, you'll just play four Collected Company and a couple cords because you're a combo deck.
I think
nothing stops the quad laser, Daryl.
I think it's telling that Collected Company is considered slightly better than Court of Calling now. So, you know, we know how good Court of Calling is, and if Collected Company is that much better.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a 2-for-1, man. Like, it's very hard for this deck. Like, this version can probably miss more often than like the dedicated collected company versions, because it is playing a couple of like clunkers and like a Murderous Red Cap and an Archangel of Thune. And you know, I wouldn't consider Spike Feeder a hit off of your collected company, you know. So it is playing a few clunkers, but just like the dedicated collected company of our decks that we're just playing like Tarmogoyf, Knight of the Reliquary, and the combo, and just like just being this crazy beatdown deck with a combo finish.
Spike Feeder's fine. I mean, if you're playing against an aggro deck and you need to gain life, Instant Speed 4 life is fine.
Sure, and I'm not saying it's not good. I just wouldn't consider, like, in most situations where you're casting Collected Company, you're not looking for Spike Feeder. You're looking for, like, a combo piece, or if you're not going to hit a combo piece, you want, like, a Tarmogoyf or a Knight of the Reliquary or a Luxodon Spider.
It is a combo
piece. That's just going to punch them in the head. Right, but you can't hit an Archangel of Thune. Like, Archangel of Thune is just, like, this really big, clunky card that's really hard for the deck to deal with. Like, I guess you can, like, you can parlay it into Infinite Life with Kitchen Finks, which is already going to give you Infinite Life.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter, but, like...
Well, yet another way to reset the Persist counter on your Persist creatures, too. So,
factors
in, but...
Yeah, this is really a Kitchen Finks combo deck here.
Yeah, it's very much a Kitchen Finks combo deck.
All right, well, I think that's enough of this modern event. There's a lot going on here. You can check out some other stuff. Grixis Delver's in second, which is kind of cool. That's got the Gurmag Anglers in it. This one's only got one, but I've seen four of in a lot of these decks.
Gurmag Anglers Taskers. And Taskers. Yep,
yeah, these seem pretty fun. I've seen the Mishra's Bauble in some of them, which seems kind of odd, but you can basically scry and then
free
draw.
Lotus Petal, man.
Yeah. So that's cool. Merfolk showed up. Obviously, Twinning End is on here, so... It was a party of the reject modern decks.
Yeah, a lot of cool things going on in this event.
Cool, but that brings us to the Modern Master spoilers, which hopefully you guys had a chance to look at those. They spoiled quite a bit at this point, and I think that you know we're in spoiler week, so those are going to be coming out daily. But the mythics are kind of old news. I mean, we've had those for a while, but Noble Hierarch was finally confirmed, which is a big one. In terms of a financial target, nothing too surprising, but I am happy to see things like, Spellskite's on here, which was up at $20. Splinter Twin is on here, which was $20. Daybreak Cornet, which was like unreasonably expensive because it was played in the Stupid Boggles deck, is now reprinted with new art.
Yeah, Bitter Blossom was unreasonably expensive.
Right.
Lightning Bolt.
Is not in here as an uncommon, which was also, you know, $2 or something, but...
Leyline of Sanctity is climbing into the unreasonable range as well.
Mm-hmm. Though a lot of these cards make me think, like, EDH Masters at the same time, because, like, when is Etched Monstrosity played in Modern, and when is Shadow Mage Infiltrator played in Modern?
So,
you know?
Those cards aren't for
the
Modern...
still a draft format.
Yeah, it's a draft format. Those cards are for the draft. So, like, Etched Monstrosity is for draft.
All
right. Etched Oracle, draft. Kozilek Predator, draft. Apocalypse Hydra, draft. Bloodthrown Vampire is for draft. So like they're printing a bunch of these awesome modern staples at Rare and Mythic, and some of them are uncommon with Bolt. But like Vampire Lacerator, you're obviously trying to make like a black aggro deck exist. Cranial Plane, there's a lot of artifacts that are already spoiled, but like that's just another like powerful card. And then they just put like. They're going to probably put Urzatron in this because they've given you like all of this big goofy ramp stuff with all the Eldrazi and Artisan of Kozilek and Iowugan. So they're giving you like a ramp deck as a deck that you can play and stuff like that. So they're like also trying to build a reasonable draft format. It's hard to do both.
Okay. All right. Well, there are plenty of cards in here that are played quite a bit in Modern and have got quite a hefty price tag. So I'm interested to hear what you guys think. Is going to happen to the prices on some of these. First one, Goblin Guide. Right now, it can be got at $15 on TCG Player. Daryl, Brandon, Kendrick, where do you see this card in 1 year's time?
I see this card attacking for two and revealing a land off the top of my opponent's deck.
Thank you, Brandon.
I see me drawing that land and being disappointed that I'm getting Goblin Guided and having to discard on turn.
I'll answer your question.
Thank you.
I think it's going to go down a little bit in the short term, but it is definitely one of the best,
red
cards ever. So there's that. One note that I've noticed on, you know, these reprint sets is look for the new card art, because I found that historically that has not hit the price of the original card too much. It's almost considered, you know,
worse.
A separate card.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if people want multiples, they only want, you know, the same multiple. Or, I mean, it drops a little bit, but not nearly as much as something that has the exact same art and looks, you know, identical, except for the set symbol.
No, I should also mention that Goblin God was one of those ones that was spoiled kind of unofficially and still hasn't been shown in the new border yet. So we could, A, get new art for this one, B, get the same art, or C, it could not even be part of the set at all, and that was just a rumor. But it is showing up on the official MagicSpoiler.com, which is typically a pretty reliable source.
I think that, in all honesty, Goblin Guide, I think it'll sink to like $10. I think that, you know, that's a huge hit for Goblin Guide to lose 33% of its value. But, like, depending on, because they haven't really made it super clear how aggressive this print run is. If this print run is fairly aggressive, even though the MSRP is high, Goblin Guide, I think that enough of it will be open that Goblin Guide's circulation will increase and its price will drop. If this print run is more aggressive than Modern Masters 1, but still not hyper-aggressive, like, you know, like to the depth of like a conspiracy print run, then Goblin Guide will hang around $12.50, $13. So it'll take a small dip.
Okay.
So it just, it does, I think a lot of it is dependent on how aggressive is the print run for Modern Masters 2.
Right, which is related to its rarity, too, and that also hasn't been determined. So I don't see this card being a mythic just based on what it is. I mean, it's a 2-2 for one. Yeah, you know, it doesn't have any, like, significant abilities. It's not a legendary creature, so...
2-2 haste is significant, but...
Right, but it does not seem like a mythic, is what I'm saying. I would highly doubt that it's going to be a mythic. But if it is, I could see almost an insignificant drop in its price over the next year.
Correct.
Hopefully that will stay rare and that will bring it down, because that's one of those cards right now that's bringing one of those cheap decks to play into the kind of not so cheap territory. A good intro to modern decks to pick up burn. Not to say anything about the skill level it takes to play it, but the cost it takes to put the deck together.
Yeah.
And Goblin Guide is what's kind of boosting that up right now.
Yep.
Okay, got another one for you. How about Vendilion Cleek? The Cleek is officially announced. It's got alternate art, as I'm sure you've seen.
I love it. I love that.
It can be gotten on TCG Player now for $55. So it's down from like $70-$80 just a couple weeks ago. So already, has the price already dropped to the point where it's going to be, or is it going to keep going down?
I don't know if it's going to drop that much further. I mean, this is a card that sees a lot of play, and I think
it's a multi-format all-star. EDH, Legacy, Modern. It sees minute play in the format that exists that called Vintage, but it's not really played, like, that format's not a thing, so it's not super something to be concerned of. But, like, this card's, I don't think this card's ever going to drop below $50.
You don't think so?
Stunned.
So you wouldn't be surprised if it keeps this price even after it's, even after Modern Masters is officially on the market and there are boxes at every Target across the country. No, I'm just kidding.
0%. Like, if Vendilion Cleek's cost in a year dropped to $35, I would be stunned. Like, literally stunned silent.
Okay. To clarify, I don't think that Modern Masters is sold at Target, is it?
It's sold at your local Walmart and Walgreens.
Okay. All right. Thanks. All right. So, general consensus is no, it's going to stay around, or what? Anyone else disagree with that?
I think my point about the different art holds here. I mean, it's a beautiful piece. I think people are going to want this Vendilion Cleek, and it's going to stay.
I mean, I want
at
it.
A decent price. Yeah,
I own three Cleeks, and I want three of this Cleek instead. Like, this Cleek is awesome.
It's also tied to the new playmat art that they're giving away at the GP.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
Daryl, you can trade me your old Cleeks.
All right, I got one more for you. Cryptic Command. Cryptic Command was in Modern Masters 1 and still ended up being about $60 in the last, maybe a month ago it was $60. Is that accurate? I want to believe so.
Thereabouts.
And now it's down to $40 after being spoiled in Modern Masters 1. Lorwyn version is about $40 as well. Pretty insignificant difference between the two.
I think you're going to see a holding pattern. Like, if the first printing of Modern Masters didn't do enough for Cryptic Command, the second printing surely won't, unless, again, they print aggressively.
Right, right.
Well, this is another rare, not a mythic, keep in mind.
Oh, Cryptic was a mythic in Modern Masters 1?
No.
Oh, no, but it's a rare again, you know?
Yeah, it's a rare again. But yeah, if it's a rare again, still, they have to like print aggressively or the price won't drop, because they did this once and the price didn't drop.
Yeah, I think it will really depend on how much we get, how many modern players we get off this set. You know, because last time, one of the big reasons why the prices didn't drop off Tarmogoyf and Bob and such is that we got such a huge influx. And I wonder if Modern Masters 2 will do the same thing, or if it'll kind of feel like old news, like they're doing this again, you know?
Right. Yeah, so there's a lot of great stuff in here, a lot of stuff that we need to see. Like, obviously, Vendilion Clique needs to be reprinted. Cryptic Command needs to be reprinted. Some people might disagree with me if you've got them, but as a player who wants to get into like a white, blue, red deck, like, I don't know, an $80 price tag on three of the cards, and it is a bit of a...
So I think one of the big winners that a lot of people are kind of... Two of them, actually,
yeah,
that a lot of people will want to play are Bitter Blossom and Noble Hierarch. Those are two cards that I think definitely need to see a reprint.
Right.
Bitter Blossom doesn't really show up in Modern a lot. Like, people peg it for the Fairies deck, but I see it much better as a sideboard card in the Abzan decks, as, like, if you're going to play the Abzan Mirror or another grindy matchup, you have cards like Kitchen Finks and Siege Rhino to gain you life. You can play Batterskull or Luxon Warhammer or whatever thing you want to do if you want to gain more life, and like create your deck in such a way that you can play Bitter Blossom, because it's very hard for Lingering Souls to go toe-to-toe with Bitter Blossom and win over the course of a long game.
Yeah, and both of those cards are like necessities for the decks that they're in. Too, Bitter Blossom is a pretty huge part of like a token strategy that a lot of new players might want to get into. And if Wizards is thinking about reprinting cards that they're more accessible to people, like thinking about getting into Modern, tokens is one of those. You know, like as a new player, that's one of those decks that I'd recommend for a new player to pick up. It's easy to build. It's cheap, right? Aside from the Bitter Blossoms.
Yep.
And then Noble Hierarch is, you know, like the go-to mana dork after Deathrite got banned, and obviously you saw a big boost after Deathrite was taken out of the format. So, all right, last thing related to the Modern Master spoilers, they don't have any pattern of printing a land cycle in Modern Masters, but it would be wonderful to see like a man land cycle with Celestial Colonnade, Creeping Tar Pit stuff in there. Or also, like, Horizon Canopy's up at $25. Do you see any of that stuff showing up?
I guess they did state that they wanted to make this a two-color format for drafting.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that means that they have to have some sort of two-color land enabler.
There wasn't anything in the first Modern Masters, was there, in terms of a rare land cycle?
I don't remember land cycle. They had
There was like Academy Ruins that was a rare or something like that.
But not a cycle, though.
No. So, thoughts on that? I think they're probably going to reprint the Urzatron lands in this one. Because those being a couple bucks is still kind of a damper for the Urzatron want-to-players that can't, you know, 30 or 40 bucks just to like get the namesake of your deck is kind of annoying.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, making those more available is a thing that might happen, especially with, like, every Eldrazi spoil and Iomugen. I don't see how they wouldn't try and sneak that in there, too. But I could definitely see... I think they will reprint the Manland cycle, because they're going to bring the enemy-colored Manlands in Battle for Zendikar. Because that's where the original
ones
came out.
Okay.
So the enemy color cycle of this, like they did with fetch lands and Zendikar for enemy cycle, they did the friendly dual lands, and now they're going to do the enemy dual lands that are creatures, because it now syncs up with Modern that all 10 enemy dual lands that are creatures will be there as well.
Is that confirmed, Daryl?
It's not confirmed, but it just seems too logical. It's kind of like the Cons of Tarkir fetch lands thing that happened. Like, we know they're going to reprint fetch lands. It makes no sense for there only to be 5 fetch lands. Like, it's just not logical. So when is the like most reasonable time for them to reprint fetch lands? And it came up to be Cons of Tarkir. So,
yeah, I mean, it's possible that we don't see fetch lands in Battle for Zendikar.
I mean, I think you'll see the reprint of the other 5 fetch lands, but I think in the second or third set, like World Wake was the second set of that format and introduced these enemy color fetch lands or enemy color man lands. I think you'll see the Battle for Zendikar format flip flop, where they print the enemy color dual lands and the friend, or they'd have to, and the enemy color fetches as well. Mm-hmm. That way you have mana fixing, because it makes no sense for standard to only have 5 fetch lands. So it makes more sense to like try and get all, if they're going to try and make standard sort of the same way, it gives you access to more mana fixes.
Well, every time you've had fetch lands, you only had 5 fetch lands.
Yeah, but I mean, if they're taking the it makes no sense approach,
yeah,
because then they might end up printing the other 5. Okay. Because they created every other format where there were dual lands of mostly all 10 types to be able to piece things together recently, like between pain lands and shock lands and things like that. So I don't see why, for temples, I don't see why they wouldn't do the same thing.
Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah. I mean it's logical, but it's not necessarily confirmed at all.
Okay. Well, the last thing, and this makes me a little nervous right now. I don't see Serum Visions on the list for reprint, and I don't see Aether Vial on the list for reprint. Both are like common and uncommon level cards that are up. Like Serum Visions is $6 at the minimum. Aether Vial is $16. Both of them are like pretty necessary for those types of builds. Like the tempo builds need Serum Visions. The blue tempo decks with Delver, the Hate Bears decks need Aether Vial. There are plenty other like really really easy to kind of get into the format decks that need those cards.
Yeah, there's still a lot to be spoiled. I mean, there's on Mythic Spoiler, I only see 3 mono blue cards so far. So,
okay. Yeah,
there's quite a few.
I just figured that if they were going to do this, it was like going to be one of the first ones so that people could stop freaking out about it. Because I think that a lot of people are in the same boat with me. Like, man, I want to play that Grixis Delver deck, but I really don't want to buy freaking Serum Visions for
$6. For $8, yeah. For $8 a piece or some dumb stuff like that. Yeah.
I should just run Monstrous Carotid.
Oh god, walk away.
Okay, all right, well, that's all for me. Let's hear Kendrick's stuff.
Okay, yeah, so my philosophy major's showing here. I'm gonna turn into a kind of a pure theory piece, but hang in there with me.
All right,
so obviously you guys know all about tempo in general, right? I mean, it's when you're trying to fight on the mana axis, by playing cheaper cards.
Mm-hmm.
Then your opponent.
I would almost, and I'm gonna jump in here real quick.
Yeah.
I would call that the axis of time, almost. Tempo being the axis of time, not necessarily the axis of mana.
Yep. Yeah, I like that too. There are a number of definitions you can give.
Yeah, descriptive.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I mean, in general, the goal is to end the game where you bring all of your cards to bear, where your opponent is left with them in hand, right?
Correct.
Where you're remanding or, bouncing their cards or sometimes in Burn's case, just, killing them before they can play everything. I'm not here just to talk about, like, pure tempo decks that try to make tempo positive plays on every turn, kind of like Delver does. But I want to talk about kind of how combo decks and other critical turn decks use tempo in kind of like a interestingly different way. Because, those decks often revolve around like a showdown turn. A turn where all that matters are the tools that each player can bring to bear on that turn.
So do you have any decks or formats in mind particularly?
So an example might be let's compare like spell in Modern Infect, for instance. Let's compare when you're deck building, choosing whether to play something like Spellskite or another like one mana protection spell that you could use for your creature, such as what's that Phyrexian white?
Apostle's Blessing.
Yeah, Apostle's Blessing, something like that. Well, if you think of it in terms of like turn-based tempo, where you're trying to get all of your cards to be relevant on that turn, Spellskite, you kind of get to prepay in a way, right? Like you get to play it on an earlier turn before you're trying to infect them for 10, and it costs you 0 mana on your combo turn. Whereas your Apostle's Blessing costs you 1 mana on your tempo turn. Or in your combo turn, excuse me. Yeah. Similarly, like Slaughter Pact in Abzan against Twin, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're playing against Twin as any kind of mid-range deck, you're faced with this dilemma of, do I play my threat, or do I leave up for my removal spell? And Slaughter Pact is kind of the reverse of Spellskite. You're not prepaying, but you're
Post.
you're putting it on your credit.
So, with interest,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so, yeah. I've gotten to watch a lot of Splinter Twin, and I can talk about this. Like, this is, there's an exact turn that I've watched this pivot. So, like, you go, like, the game goes back and forth, like, they spell Snare the Tarmogoyf, and then you, like, do your thing on turn three, and Abzan's on the play, and they play a Siege Rhino. So, they're trying to get a 4-5 into play and deal 3 damage, and then, like, they're just dead if they don't have Slaughter Pact, because they just go, like, guy, untap, land, twin you. And so, like, you have to weigh what is the value of the Siege Rhino in play versus my ability to continue playing the game. And if you don't have a card like Slaughter Pact that you can kind of put on post-pay or, like, some sort of removal spell that you can do that with,
mm-hmm.
you can never play the Siege Rhino. So just by the games, like, the concept of the Twins deck building, you've essentially counterspelled the Siege Rhino. Unless your opponent plays in such a way that they don't care about losing the game. So I think this is a perfect kind of pivot position that you've created a situation in a deck that multiple of your opponent's cards are essentially discarded because they can't cast them in fear of losing the game.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess where I think this is most applicable is when you're deck building, if you're thinking about what to do for certain matchups that are like this, where they really do revolve around showdown turns, what you should care about are either really cheap ways so that you can bring more cards into the picture on that showdown turn, or ways to prepay. You know, discard spells are a good example of that, because you can play the discard spell early on, get that disruption in while you have the mana to, and then, you know, continue playing the game without
fear, you know, of losing.
Yeah, needing to have, like, triple dispel, you know, later,
sure.
Something like that.
Sure.
Have you ever heard of Adrian Sullivan's concept of, like, the two life, or the life matters, is what he calls it. But basically, he talks about the resources in Magic being, like, you know, a mana symbol or two life, whereas, like, Shock is a one mana spell that deals two damage. It's, like, the most basic mm-hmm. card in the game, right?
Yep.
So then if you go even further into the future, like, you look at the Phyrexian mana symbols, like, you either pay one mana or you pay two life. So each increment of two life is the equivalent of, like, one, you know, one card or one mana function. And so when you're talking about the values and the resources you have in your hand, you're kind of assessing, like, what you have available to you based on that, you know, based on time as it relates to the damage you're going to be taking, you know, over turns. And so if you're attacking with a Goblin Guide, okay, yeah, the first turn you play and the first turn you beat in, you're getting two damage for one mana, right? But if you can keep attacking in the consecutive turns, then, you know, every time you attack again beyond that first bit, you're getting more value out of that card.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of tempo, if we're talking about tempo, we're sticking a one mana creature and protecting it and getting that thing in there, then we're squeezing the value out of that card and we're keeping that tempo going, correct?
Yeah, I like it. I think that's definitely applicable here. In most matchups, you really are trying to squeeze as much value out of each card you can and transfer those advantages, you know, to different resources. You're converting your cards to damage so that, you know, they'll die before you. What I'm trying to say with this turn tempo idea is the timing really matters for a lot of matchups. It doesn't matter when, you know, if your card is really, really efficient. If you get tempoed out and you can only bring one card to the table on this showdown turn, you can only cryptic them when they're playing Scapeshift, they're going to be able to remand you and have more cards on that critical turn.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
Anyway, just something I was thinking about.
Yeah, I think the fruit you have to be to bring to bear in these sorts of situations is either something so powerful that your opponents can't deal with it on the, you know, the critical turn, or so much that they're overwhelmed by it on the critical turn.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's very similar to aggro decks and control finishers. Like, you're going to kill them one of two ways. You're going to kill them by throwing a bunch of rotten tomatoes at them, or you're going to kill them by shooting them with a gun. But you're going to kill them eventually. Like, that's sort of the thought here, is do I bring a bunch of dispels, or am I trying to do something like trying to create a situation where I can slaughter games them before a critical turn. If we're, you know, talking about specifically playing, it's like combo decks. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm going to try and slaughter games them, you have to do something in the interim to get into your very powerful concept that slows them down. And if you don't, they're just going to overpower you because you didn't bring anything to the table. But if you're going to try and fight them with a bunch of dispels and spell pierces and negates, then you don't necessarily have to do as much up front because you're going to try and combat them on the critical turn.
Yeah, because you have more cheap spells. Correct. Than they do. Yeah. Yep, so I just like to internalize these kind of ideas to have them in my tool belt as I'm, you know, in a tournament sideboarding and trying to figure out, is this card good now?
Yeah, I've run into this a ton, and it's mostly because I just build a ton of control decks. It's like, how do I bring the most effective thing to fight the most battles in the most efficient way? And that's where, like, playing one of is very powerful, but if your weapon doesn't come to bear and you won't have it, then it doesn't matter if it was good enough to win the fight. So you have to balance, you know, how good are the cards I'm trying to bring to bear, and how often am I going to see them that I'm actually going to use them in these situations.
So that, have you played a lot of any of the Abzan in Standard? You know, basically all versions of the Abzan run the same, like, kind of removal suite to a certain extent. But right, they're all, like, very specific removal cards, and that kind of makes me think of this. And, like, there are, like, 14,000 people playing the Abzan every weekend, but only so many of them win, you know, get in the top eight. And it's all about, you know, making those decisions about which removal spell is appropriate for which time. And you've got, like, you know, choices where Abzan Charm can remove a creature with power 3 or greater from the game. There are a lot of things that you have to consider. Like, is that the right spell over, like, a Bile Blight? Or is that the right spell over Hero's Downfall? Because, hey, if you kill this creature now, am I going to have the resources to kill a Planeswalker that I might see later on if I use the Bile Blight now as opposed to the Abzan Charm? Or am I going to exile a creature when I need to be exiling their Kitchen Finks later? I know that's not a reasonable example in Standard, but there's not a whole lot that is.
So, I think that decision comes up much sooner than you think it does. And it comes up before the tournament when you deck build. You know, what am I going to see a ton of? Am I going to see a ton of situations where I think Hero's Downfall is better? Because I'm going to see, you know, all the fruit that's being brought to bear is Planeswalkers and big creatures? Or am I going to see a bunch of Goblin Ravelmasters? So I'm going to have to bring Bile Blights to bear. Like, you know, it's sort of, you know, the decisions, a lot of these decisions, are made before you even sit down at the tournament hall. They're made, you know, in the privacy of your own home or at your apartment when you're brewing with your friends or in the hotel room the night before. Hopefully not, but, you know, a lot of these decisions, I think, come up before the tournament even starts.
Or when you get there and you wander around, you scout everything out and see that everyone's on Esper Dragons.
Sure.
Whoops, I'm playing Nabzan, right?
Yeah. We didn't have enough time for it. I wanted to talk Standard in my segment, but I had to cut it short. There was, I think, an Abzan deck that was running it had a main deck, Crux of Fate, and one in the sideboard, too, which I thought was kind of cool. Kind of a very, like, you know, meta call based on, okay, we want a removal spell that can also double as, you know, I can get more value out of this when I'm playing against a dragon matchup, and I want to kill all their dragons and still have creatures on the board. But it can also function as, hey, I'm getting beat down by a Tarka Red, and they've got 15 tokens on the table.
Wrath of God, yeah. Just get all that out of here, please. Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I like these sorts of discussions.
Yeah. Kendrick, did you want to talk Delver Legacy musings here?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, so I was thinking a little bit about Grixis, Delver, and Legacy. And so I've tried a couple different versions of this. You know, the Crossroads is really, am I playing Stifle and Wasteland, or am I playing, you know, more spells and Dig Through Time, getting card advantage that way? Those versions usually involve Swift Spear and stuff, right? And I was thinking about their respective matchups. Obviously, Mana Denial is very good against the classic Fetch Dual Mana Base, and you get so many free wins off Stifle and Wasteland decks, just like Rug does. As you might expect, the Dig Through Time version is much better against, you know, the Aether Vial decks, Death and Taxes, and, you know, other decks that are more immune to your Mana Denial. And I was thinking, is there any kind of hybrid to be had here? And the issue that I was running into is if you start at Stifle Wasteland and you want to side it out, you don't really have enough good sideboard cards for every matchup while still having the specific hate that you need, right? Like, you're not going to board... Not all of your sideboard cards are going to be relevant for the matchup that you're seeing.
Correct.
But an idea that I had was, what if you had sideboard dig through times, which would allow you to board in more cards because the dig through times are essentially extra copies of your sideboard cards, so like they can find them. And it's also your card advantage engine to make up for the fact that you're not stranding any cards in their hand by wastelanding them out of the game.
Okay, so I have a lot of qualms with this concept that you're thinking mm-hmm. of. First of all, you're cutting valuable, precious sideboard slots for dig through time. So, like, the cards that you would want to dig through time for aren't there because you don't have slots for them. So that's my, like, number one problem. That's, like, the billboard that hit your in the face when you tell me about it.
Yeah, I conceptualize it similarly to sideboards that have, like, Enlightened Tutor plus targets. Because Dig Through Time is pretty similar.
To Enlightened Tutor, that's fair.
I mean, obviously it's not the same, but...
They function in a similar role. I'll agree with that. That makes sense.
I think 4 Ponder, 4... Brainstorm, 3 Dig is going to find a card just as fast as Enlightened Tutor will.
I will not disagree with that. So my secondary thing that kind of came up is, can your deck support both of these things? So when you're describing this Grixis Delver deck, my next thought was, okay, we have Tassigar and potentially Gurmag Angler and Dig Through Time. How often are we going to strand cards in our own hand because we have so much delve?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think so, the threat base might have to be...
Yeah, I think you would have to select, do you want to play Tassigoyf or do you want to play Dig Through Time? And I think that for Grixis Delver in specific, you would rather play Tassigar. For Rug Delver, you could do this. Because you could sideboard out Stifle Wasteland, board in Dig Through Time, and you have no other delve. You just have Tarmogoyf, which leans on your opponent's graveyard. So,
I mean, if you're still playing Nimble Mongoose, that's a pretty bad...
I mean, yeah, Nimble Mongoose is very bad. You might have to move the Young Pyromancer in your Rug deck instead of Nimble Mongoose. But that's sort of...
Yeah. I guess the concept here is that... the fact that you have a typically unusual sideboard card in Dig Through Time can kind of function as extra copies of your sideboard cards, which basically allows you to side out larger sections of your deck in more matchups.
It allows you to side out more bad cards.
All right, well, cool idea.
Just a thought. Came up today. Haven't tested it. We'll be trying it soon.
Cool. Of course.
Kendrick, do you have a list that you've...
Sure, I can post it later.
Yeah, because we'll post that as our deck tech for the week.
Absolutely. You want my current Grixis Delver version of either version, or you want what I'm thinking about for Dig?
Can we have both?
Absolutely.
All right, cool. We'll put both up there. And then also, if anyone's got any suggestions for a way to run Dig in the Grixis Delver, let us have it.
Yeah. Kendrick, do either of those lists run Spellsnare?
They do not.
Okay.
It could reasonable. Well, so it could be pretty reasonable in the non-Stifle Wasteland, like the Swift Spear Dig Through Time version, because, you know, obviously it's better than Spell Pierce in a deck that where you're not mana denying them. But I found that Cabal Therapy actually fits that flex slot really nicely. Because you're playing Young Pyromancer alongside Swift Spear, you get a lot of triggers and tokens to flashback. So,
Sure. Yeah, it's just curious, I mean, since you know, your love of tempo is certainly shining. So
Swift Spear just sounds awkward in this deck. I think, like, it sounds like the kind of the odd man out.
It wouldn't be in the hybrid version or any version with Stifle, because you don't cast enough spells on your turn.
Yeah, it still sounds like the odd man out even in the, like, non-Stifle version.
Oh.
Because if you want to play something like Spell Snare, like, a lot of your removal spells, like, a lot of your counter spells and things just don't get cast on your own turn. So, like, you have to offer up your own spells to the counter spell gods. So, like, Swift Spear sounds like the odd man out. If you're even in a tempo, like in a tempo list like that, even if you're not mana denying them, because you're playing so many counter spells.
Yeah, it's been very good actually in the Dig Through Time version, because the only counter spells you're actually playing are Force and Daze, which are free. So you're freeing up your mana for actual.
Yeah. I didn't know if we were going to. Yeah.
You basically ponder and brainstorm on your own turn as much as possible, because you want to fill your graveyard.
I didn't know if you were going to take Brandon's suggestion of, like, trying Spell Snare or something like that.
Right.
You know, playing Flusterstorm. You know, these things where, you know, playing these main board counter spells is very powerful. And I think especially if you're mana denying them, like, and not mana denying them, Spell Snare, because, like, a lot of Delver struggles with the powerful two drops. Like, Spell Snare seems just very good for the deck. And so instead of playing, like, that guy, Swift Spear, you would just want another, like, one mana creature or something like that. I don't know.
But yeah, Brandon, that's a good suggestion. I've seen an uptick in Spell Snare out of, you know, Rug Delver and everything. They've been running a split recently. So yeah, it's a very good card.
Yeah, I'm just a big fan, because I feel like with two, you're probably going to get the one that you want to cast that game. And, you know, obviously that extra mana that you're sparing yourself, they're paying two mana, you're only paying one mana. You get to spend one mana on something else. And, you know, I always love that play personally, and I'm sure you do too.
Yes, sir. Love me some Spell Snare.
Brandon, you like playing that one mana for Jace's Phantasm, don't you?
You know, Spell Snare really protects that
dragon
Phantasm.
For one.
Yeah, too bad it's not a dragon. It's an illusion. But if it were, then we could Silumgar Scorn too, you know?
Oh, man.
Run eight counter spells.
It's an honorary dragon. It's a 5/5 flyer.
I'm not a Legacy player, but I think I just solved the format.
God, it hurts, the stupidity.
All right.
It hurts so bad.
All right, should we wrap this up?
Yeah.
Okay, we got a couple of end of cast routines. First of all, we have the first ever submission of a bad beat story. Semi-anonymous story, as it just has the initials of the person who sent it in. Brandy, you want to take that?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, here we go. And by the way, we did not yet get the dollar for this. This guy is taking the pay later approach.
Yeah.
Much like the slaughter pack. So this is the slaughter pack of bad beat stories.
Maybe $1.05, like freedom.
Dear Cardnock Life, last week I spent about 45 minutes making fun of Torres' garbage 5-color mono blue dragon control deck. I thought it was, quote, a pile of stinky poop, end quote, and a stroke of luck that he won with it. Then I played in a PPTQ against it and lost. My mono red deck and I cried as the opponent gleefully turned a Master of Waves and his baby sideways. Then I drove home and it was sad. I'll never make fun of Mike's decks again.
All right, you want to read the initials?
Yeah, what are the initials on the bottom?
Initials JG. So who knows who that might be? All we know is that they like playing red cards.
Zero clue.
So if you are JG, make sure you pay up. Brandon will include your PayPal information in the show notes.
Yeah, but if you don't, you're going to lose the podcast.
That's funny that you got that, because I was at a PPTQ last weekend myself. I actually went with John, and John was playing a red deck of some sort.
Were you playing some garbage 5-color mono blue dragon control deck?
I was not playing the Torres deck, but I did
What's
see this.
What's John's last name again?
It was something that starts with a G. I don't know.
It's Galley. Oh,
that's not relevant.
Anyways, it was fun. We went, actually, it was great. I got to meet up with John and a lot of the other Madison Mox guys, and we went out to Greenfield for the PPTQ at Board Game Barrister, which is a great shop. They had subs on sale there that were delivered from Cousins. It was the first time I'd ever seen food at an event like that, and wow, I can't believe no one's doing that. It was such an awesome idea. And so I had a good time. I played my Sultai deck that we deck teched last week, or I guess we just talked about it a lot last week, and made just a couple of really insignificant changes, or not so insignificant, a couple of small changes, but had a good time. I actually top eighted with it and got taken out in the first round of that to a Tarker Red, which made me cry. So that's my bad beat story.
It's too good.
Yeah. But we'll be on the lookout because there's another one coming up May 16th. Hopefully some of you guys can make it down to the Standard 5K in Milwaukee.
Ooh.
Daryl, you thinking about it?
Thinking about it, but also might not be able to make it, so.
Okay. Should you're talking about being in Baltimore.
I might be moving to Baltimore, yeah. That might be a slight problem.
Okay. Well, anyone else, let me know. I will be there.
Also, including all of our listeners.
Yeah. There was a guy that I ran into at the tournament, too, and I told him I was going to talk about his event on the podcast, and I couldn't find the information for it. But basically, he's a recruiter for the Marines, and this is a Wisconsin-only event, so I don't want to, alienate the out of the Midwest fans. But if you want to travel, it sounds like a pretty sweet event. They're having, free paintball and everything at this, and, you get a play mat just for joining. He basically talked about how awesome it was, and I assumed that I was going to be able to find it really easy online to share information about it, but I wasn't able to do that. So if you're listening, please let me know.
And so do you play Magic while shooting each other with paintball guns?
No, I think the Magic tournament goes on, and then if you scrub out, then you can go play free paintball, and it's all included with your admission, which is $20 to play. So you get a play mat and a t-shirt and go paintballing for $20. You can't beat that, right?
Deal.
Oh, by the way, you also have to sign up for the Marines.
Yeah, so that's part of it.
That may be the bad beat of that story.
Well, anyways, I will post the information and you can make a decision, an educated decision based on what you see. But it sounds pretty harmless, especially if you are not interested in joining the Marines, but just maybe want to go play Magic and have a good time. So he's a good guy. Hopefully we'll have that soon. More information.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty cool event. I think I'd honestly just drop and go play paintball.
Yeah, after your first loss to 5-card Blue Dragons, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't have to drive home because I was sad. I'd just be able to shoot my friends because I was sad.
Yeah. Anyways, non-magic, anyone do anything cool non-magic-wise this weekend or in the future here?
I wouldn't play a ton of blackjack this weekend.
Ah, no mini-golf, Daryl?
No mini-golf. It was all blackjack all the time this weekend.
Ah, cool. Did you win? How much money did you win?
$300. So.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, no complaints.
Chump change, but you know.
Only tripled the buy-in. No big deal.
Okay, yeah, there you go.
My story involves losing a ton of money.
Oh, that's not good.
Let's hear it.
It's kind of good. So,
all right.
This is also kind of a public service announcement. So I don't know if a lot of people know this, but on your income taxes, you can actually claim tax exempt for each of your paychecks. But the caveat is, at the end of the year, you still owe that money.
that's not good, man. I assume you did this.
All right, that'll be $1, Brendan.
bad beat story. Tax-exempt is...
I did, but actually, it turned out that I saved more money than what I actually needed. So I got to pay off a quarter of my student loans. So that felt really good. So.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, I'm just this Microsoft Excel master here, just mapping everything out. So I took a chunk of my flesh, and I finally got that 6.8% loan off my back.
There you go. We were talking about Napster last week when you were gone, Brandon, and John was asking about it, and I said, hey, yeah, Brandon's got some Napster experiences, so remind me next week when you guys are both on to tell the story, your bad beat story of the internet.
That'll be $2. Yeah.
Kendrick, how about you? What'd you do this week?
Well, I've actually been going in a deep dive into Hearthstone. I had never played it before.
Oh, yeah.
Well, obviously, a lot of the Magic community is a part of that. I actually got the idea of turn tempo to bring up from Hearthstone. There's a card that it's a 2-mana sorcery, basically. It puts a random creature into your hand and discounts it by 3 mana. Now you have this. Yeah, so yeah, portal, exactly. So obviously you have this choice of whether or not to play this 0 mana creature if it was 3 or less, right? Yeah. Or you can play 2 creatures next turn, which is often better in a game where you can usually only kill 1 creature a turn.
It's discounted so that's, forever?
Yeah, it's discounted forever, not just for the turn.
Hearthstone can do stuff like that because it's a computer game.
It's super funky, yeah. It's just random cards outside your class, you know, just King Crush them or whatever.
Yeah, right. Have you ever gotten a Wisp with that, Kendrick?
Oh, that's awful. No, I haven't.
All right.
I got a Boom the other day and then just coined it out on the next turn.
Nice. Nice. That Hearthstone is really fun, but it's really random. And as a Magic player, when you first start looking at it and all the like random damage and the random number generator stuff is kind of a turnoff because you want to like as a Magic player, you want to like first see what's going to happen with the cards you have in your hand. And like you can only not predict the interaction that your opponent has. But when it's like that plus like all the like, okay, I could randomly deal 1 damage to that creature. I could randomly deal 1 damage to that creature.
This game, I like watched it for a while on Twitch. And then I saw a card that I was like, oh, it's Wrath of God or Dune Blast Brawl. Like, but like it put all the creatures in a pile and then like the opponent's best creature lived. And I'm like, that's terrible. Like, what?
Yeah, I'm actually of the opinion that I'm actually of the opinion that this game actually has the right kind of randomness in it. I mean, I think that kind of random pieces is pretty fun compared to, oh, look, I drew Running Lands.
Right. Like, yeah.
The randomness in Magic is just like, oh, well, I didn't draw anything. I can't do anything.
Yeah. But, like, it just, like, it was infuriating because it's a part of, like, a 9-9. I'm like, all right, certainly the 9-9 dies. And, like, the best guy on my side lives, and it's cool. And then all of a sudden the 9-9 was there, and I'm like, why would you pick that
game
one?
Game over. Yeah.
Why would you pick that one? And then I read the card, and it was random. I'm like, oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. Hearthstone is great. I think, like, as a Magic player, like, what I want, as a spiky Magic player, what I want is the ability to, like, really play in, like, tournaments and organize events easier without having to kind of use a third party to host it and everything. So once that happens, I think I'll be hopelessly addicted again, but I've taken a little bit of a hiatus lately.
That you think they need, like, just in-client tournaments and stuff?
I think so, yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yep. Don't you love that?
Or at least incentives at all for ranked.
Yeah. Yeah.
So...
They do. You have that little icon on the side of your face that tells you how good you are.
Right.
So. All right. Well, I went to a concert last night. It was Death Cab for Cutie. It's been a while since I've listened to that band. But
they came to town. Are you sure you didn't go back there in like year 2000?
It was not in fact, Brandon, they got a new album out. And it's about as good as the Five Color Blue Dragons. I'm not a big fan of it. But I did have a good time at the concert, even though I started to fall asleep. And I think I'm starting to become an old man, and I feel really bad about it. But come 8 o'clock, if I'm doing something that involves sitting down and watching something to be entertained, I'm going to be
over.
It's over. It's really sad.
You know, honestly, I haven't been to many concerts, but one of the ones I did go to was back in the day, Death Cab for Cutie, with an all-star lineup of... The Killers was there, War Kids, and Shiny Toy Guns.
Oh, nice.
So yeah, I liked Death Cab in that event, but that was like, I don't know, 04.
Yeah, I'm still living the glory days, man. This was my high school, my high school nostalgia trip here.
Cool.
But it was a good time, and I apologize for that being on a Monday. So we'll go back to the typically scheduled programming next week.
Maybe with more Shuming Chen?
Maybe. Who really knows? And maybe we'll have Kendrick back soon. It was great having you, Kendrick.
Yeah, thanks, man. I enjoyed it.
So before we sign out, real quick, we are Card Knock Life, where bad beats are $1. You can get us at @card_knock_life for Twitter. Or visit our webpage at cardknocklifepodcast.com. We've also got Facebook. You can search that. You know how to do that if you're on Facebook. And you can also send your bad beat stories to Brandon. he's waiting.
Always a dollar. He's waiting for a future dollar.
Yeah, $1.05 in the future.
But if you forget to pay, you lose the game. And then it's another bad beat story that you can't afford. All right, good night.
Good night, guys.